Fed Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools.
For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown.
Through its Fed Talks series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia students and Georgia schools.
This is John White.
And this is Craig Gears.
And this is Fed Talks with John and Craig.
Well, let's get started on our first podcast. This is Craig and John's Fed Talks. So our intention here is to have a conversation with experts here at the department who could shed some light for us as well as the public on, you know, what are these programs that we run and operate for our school systems here in Georgia. So our first guest is Ms. Shawn Owens, who's with us here at the department and has the notable title of ombudsman for the state for a federal program. Well, it's really a part of the ESSA law, which is ensuring that we provide equitable services to kids who are in private schools. So that's going to be the focus of our conversation for these first few podcasts of this series. So we'll get right off and started. So, Shawn, let's start with the basics and tell us, why did Congress intentionally include children enrolled in private school in the ESSA law?
Well, a lot of people may not know, but Congress actually, since the passage of ESEA in 1965, local educational agencies, or the LEAs as we refer to them, have been required to provide equitable services to private school students, teachers, and in some cases, other educational personnel and parents under a number of the ESEA programs. Because public tax dollars support federal programs, nonprofit private school children and teachers are eligible to access the services these programs provide. So the long and the short of it is, these are taxpayers. They are contributing to the federal dollars that support the programs, and their students also earn the finances that pay for these. So that's the reason why these students are actually entitled to services under Title I and Title VIII, and also IDEA.
Okay, so bottom line is, because the parents are taxpayers like all of us, and these are programs that are offered by the federal government, that their kids should be entitled to the services, the eligible children should be entitled to the services, just like any other student attending public school.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's pretty understandable, right. I think.
But can we back up a second? I'd kind of like to know, just for the audience, what does equitable services even mean? Because you've used that a couple times, it's in the statute. Maybe we should clarify that for everyone.
Right. So equitable services actually refers to in education the principle of fairness. So services are considered to be equitable when the LEA meets the expenditure requirements in statute and provides a program that meets the educational needs of participants. Now, that's not to be confused with equal. Those are not the same. But it does look at the overall program and the expenditures in the light of the students' needs and making sure that you are fair in how those you're actually providing the services.
Do you know if there's any specific way that a private school would need to know if the services are equitable? How do they know that what they're getting is equitable?
So a lot of that comes down to consultation, and one of the things to keep in mind, and that's actually the biggest thing we hear, relationships between the LEAs and between the private schools, and the importance of ongoing consultation. So when you take a look at this, you should be looking at what are your allocations, how are those allocations determined, what are the services that will be provided, what are the needs of the students in that particular school, what's the time of day that this service will be provided? Will there be a third party person? Will they be provided directly? And also keep in mind while I'm thinking of it, LEAs do not send finances to schools. So they don't send the money to schools. They actually provide the services to the schools.
Oh, that's different than what I was thinking.
Right.
So the private school doesn't actually get a check.
Right. And as a matter of fact, the private school cannot be the beneficiary of the finances. So even if in a case, maybe we're talking about Title II, and the teacher goes to a conference and they're going to be reimbursed for travel. That travel actually, that the reimbursement goes to the teacher and not to the school. So there are a number of nuances that actually go along with equitable services. But to your point, the most important thing is that there's constant ongoing consultation between the LEA and the private school to make sure the needs of the students and the teachers are being met.
So where are the parents in all that, you think?
So the parents can typically, in this case, so we may have some, the parents may be involved in a the parent survey. The parents certainly can have a role as far as if they want to decline the services. Much of this does take place between the LEA and the private school.
All right, let's circle back to what you were talking about as an introduction to this, the fact that this part of the law has really been around for quite a number of years. I mean, obviously we're now in the era of the Every Student Succeeds Act, but even under No Child Left Behind and previous iterations of the law, this has always been there. But just curious, how many private schools in Georgia even know about this or really take advantage of it?
That's a great question. Actually, in Georgia, we have 674 private schools, and only 152 of those schools are participating in equitable services under Title I and Title VIII. And also keep in mind that, say, for example, with Title I dollars, that money actually follows the student. So if the student, we actually have 40 different private schools that are located outside the state of Georgia that our students actually attend. So that is one of those unique things where the dollars follow the student. So if they go somewhere else outside of the district, then they can still be provided the equitable services.
All right, so let's an example of that. So I live in Cobb County, mm-hmm. and I have a child who is in a private school, but that happens to be up in Cherokee County.
Yes.
So what you're saying is if my child is eligible for Title I, mm-hmm. that Cobb County actually has to work with my child's private school in Cherokee County to provide equitable services to my child.
Okay. Absolutely. So that even applies if my child's going to a school in Alabama?
Yes. They follow even outside the state.
So. Now, you referenced Title I as having that provision where the Title I funds can follow a child outside of what's considered the regular school district. You also mentioned Title VIII, and so that's not everybody knows what Title VIII is. So Title VIII is really all the other federal programs, correct?
Right.
So that would
Absolutely.
Be what exactly?
So if we talk about Title VIII, what we're talking about is Title I Part C, which is education of migratory children, Title II Part A, which is supporting effective instruction state grants, Title III Part A, which is English language acquisition, language enhancement and academic achievement, Title IV Part A, which is student support and academic achievement grants, and Title IV Part B, which is 21st Century Community Learning Centers.
So all those programs also are impacted or can coordinate with other schools for equitable services, right?
Yes. Those all fall under Title VIII, so they can receive equitable services if they're qualified for it.
So that brings up a good point, because I think that's really important, is that these programs, federal programs, are really designed to support certain populations. Like you mentioned, the Title I Part C program, which is meant for the children of migrant farm workers. So that means that a child in a private school would have to still qualify as a child of a migrant farm worker in order to even be considered to be eligible for those services.
Correct.
It's treated just the same way as it is in the public school system,
right?
Then that the children have to be eligible for the program.
But doesn't that bring up a good question, Craig, that it might be that some of the private schools may not know that they have a child who could be eligible for one of these programs, right?
Yeah, so that brings us back to statute. So statute requires that there is, that the LEA reaches out to any private school within their geographical area too, and if Title I, we've already addressed that, but so to make sure that the private schools are aware, there's initial invitation, and at that invitation, then any private school can actually attend that invitation, and at that time, any of the programs that fall under Title I or Title VIII, you can address IDEA. Now, we, of course, keep it separate because there's two separate laws, but you that at that initial consultation meeting, that's when the LEA has a responsibility to go through all of the different programs, what are the eligibility requirements, so that the private school is aware that they can participate. Now, that being said, as ombudsman, so when you see there's a difference between the number of private schools and the number of participating private schools, right, just know it is not my role as ombudsman to try to get private schools to participate in equitable services. It is, however, my role as ombudsman to make sure that the private schools are aware of the services, right, that they may be eligible for, that their students or their teachers may be eligible for. And at that point, if they choose to participate or not participate, then that, of course, is their individual decision. Every private school is different. Some are highly independent, may not want to have accept any federal services, mm-hmm, because they feel there may be strings attached. Others work very closely with the LEAs and for years have participated in equitable services. So that's the autonomy of what they're doing, the independence of the private schools, mm-hmm, to make that determination. But again, my role and our role as federal programs is basically we just want to make sure that the private schools are aware.
So give us the numbers again. What Georgia has?
672 is what we have as far
available
as
our private
674
schools.
Private schools, but only 152 participating. And most of them are actually participating in Title II, and that's where they're sending their teachers to conferences.
But it is okay that a private school decides, you know, we don't want to participate
Absolutely.
At all. Okay.
And it's up to them.
It's up to them.
Completely.
Okay.
But okay. What we need, the schools need to make sure is they're reaching out,
yes,
and that they have made contact so that when they say we're not going to participate, they know fully what they're saying they're not going to participate with.
Correct.
So who typically in the private school is the one deciding whether they want to participate or not? And do the parents ever play a role in the private school in making that decision?
Well,
that's
again,
a good question,
that's, yeah, that has actually, it varies by mm-hmm. private school as far as who makes that determination. It would be probably the person who is over that particular school. So if it's a school, a group of schools, or they may, you know, they may have, like us and any other organization or school, they have their own internal processes. Yeah. So who sits at the table and who makes those determinations, that's really up to them.
Okay. So that's nothing that the private school or that the public schools would say, hey, when you're considering this, mm-hmm. you need to talk to your parents, your teachers.
No, we are very local yeah. control yeah. state, yeah. Okay. As are all states, but we would not, nor would a district try to in any way insert themselves into the internal processes okay. of a private school. But again, okay. by law, they are required to make sure that they are reaching out. It's not that the private school even has to attend the initial consultation, mm-hmm. but it is that the LEA has to reach out right. to make sure okay. that the private schools are informed.
So are we pretty typical, Georgia, as far as the number of private schools that we actually have that take up this?
Like that percentage.
That, yeah. It varies across the board. It okay. varies across the board as far as the number of private schools based on the size of the state. I mean, right. if you're looking at Texas, you're looking at significantly
True.
More
right.
schools. And it varies as far as the level of participation. Yeah. So if I talk to my fellow ombudsman in, say, New Jersey, our private schools don't participate in most of the programs that fall under Title VIII with the yeah. exception of 2A. However, in other states, they may participate in everything across the board. So it really varies state by state.
Now, you mentioned Title IIA and Title VIII right. programs. So just, John, I think it's good to share that if people don't know exactly what program federal programs are in Title VIII, that our website.
Yes, and I was going to put a plug in there, too. You can always send emails mm-hmm. To Craig and I at federalprograms@doe.k12.ga.us. And we can always answer your questions or we can send the question to Sean if you have a question. I have a question, though, Sean, because I'm thinking about everything that we've been talking about. I know we'll have future podcasts to go into more detail, but I think one thing would be helpful to hear now, and you hit on it a little bit, was I'm a new private school. I've never interacted with a district before because we've always said no. But now I'm a little curious. Once we get through all the planning, what physically, what actually could happen? What could a child receive? What would it physically look like?
All right, so if we're talking about services, there are a number of services they could receive if they're eligible for them. So that may be, they may participate in tutoring, there may be computer-based software, their teachers may go to conferences, which the idea is to enhance the learning of that teacher so that they can then better serve the needs of the students. They may make supplemental readers. There are a number of things that they can actually...
The services are always tied back to the purpose of the federal program, right? So let's use the migrant program again, because we mentioned that once. That's really the purpose of the migrant program in the public school and for eligible private school students is really to provide additional support in the core content areas, John?
Right, and also to close any achievement gaps or learning gaps that they have from repeated moves.
Right.
So I can see tutoring would be a perfect example. If a kid needed to be brought up to speed in Algebra 1, he's in a private school, that could be something that the school could help, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example. Okay.
And also, just keep in mind that this should be laid out during consultation, and it should be based on the needs of the students in that school. So whatever their comprehensive needs assessment for that school, based on the needs of the students, that the needs of the students should drive, one, what they're eligible for, and two, what they services they're participating in.
So I wonder if when a district is doing a comprehensive needs assessment, would a private, if they know they have a lot of private schools in their area, should they include them as a stakeholder?
I think the more collaboration that we can all do, because that's one of the things I've heard from reaching out to a lot of our private schools is, you know, sometimes we are not all speaking the same language. Mm-hmm. We think because we are all in education that we get it. And in reality, they have certain regulations and guidelines that they go by and programs that we would maybe not be familiar with at all, and acronyms, and the same way for us. I've never seen anything negative come out of increased collaboration. So moving forward, that actually is one of the things that we've talked about is how can we include private schools more and what's being done at the state level in our districts, and also some of our districts who have really good working relationships with the private schools, they actually reach out to those private schools. So for example, if they're having different programs or teacher development, sometimes these districts will actually reach out to the private schools and that they work with and say, would you like to have your teachers come? Would you like to have your families come, parents come to these events that we're holding? And that way, are they required to do that? No, not necessarily, but is that a good practice and does that help build capacity for that school and benefit the students? Yeah, absolutely.
I just have one final question. I know there's most private schools are nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a private school that's actually a for-profit private school, are they eligible?
No. That is actually in statute. That it has to be a nonprofit to participate.
So those 600 some odd private schools in Georgia that you referenced.
They're all nonprofit, yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, and just out of curiosity, how did you identify those? How do we know those 600 and some odd private schools?
So Georgia has a law, and that law basically says that each of these private schools have to, so that we know that kids are, they're attending school, they actually have to report to their superintendent of that district, the superintendent
school.
Of the public school every month, mm-hmm. in order to report if the students that are attending, if they've mm-hmm. withdrawn, if they've just now come on board. And then we in turn, once a year, we actually have the LEA or the district report to us, the private school.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha. So, all right, cool. Well, Sean, we'd like to thank you for joining us for this first podcast in the series, and we look forward to actually having you come back and continue the conversation with us in the next podcast, and actually for about three more if we can do it. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you very much.